From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 2012 when a woman returned to a practice she loved after a 10-year hiatus. Imani O'Lear was recovering from surgery, struggling financially as a single mother, and her mind was reeling from the loss of a job that she said had its roots in racism. She said in a TED Talk years later that at that time she felt that her body and her blackness were a kind of curse and she needed to reset her life. That's when she returned to yoga. O'Lear said she felt her body begin to shift and she felt differently about herself. But when she looked around the room of yogis, people she genuinely loved, she noticed she was the only person of color in the room. She wondered why she wasn't seeing herself reflected back to her in that group or in other yoga classes she attended. And that's why in 2013, she founded Yoga for a Good Hood. The nonprofit organization is dedicated to educating and empowering people of color and communities that are financially struggling. And that empowerment comes in the form of yoga. Over the years, O'Lear has trained African-American yoga teachers and worked with many African-American participants. Her goal is to make many wellness practices more accessible to people of color. Tomorrow, Yoga for a Good Hood will host Black Joy, a yoga class taught by African-American teachers for African-American students. O'Lear and members of her team are going to join us, and we're talking about, well, their work and their goals. It's also a broader conversation about inclusivity in the health and wellness fields, how to create an accessible food culture, the value of culturally sensitive nutrition advice, and the health needs and disparities among different communities. Our friend Danielle Ponder reached out to us and said, I know you've met Imani, but you got to talk even more about this. She's remarkable. Danielle Ponder is a criminal defense attorney, board member for Yoga for a Good Hood, lead singer who is working on another record that sometime in 2020 we're gonna hear it.
My single comes out Friday. Can I say that?
Yeah, you can.
My single comes out Friday. You can look me up on Facebook so you can follow the Spotify link and follow me. I need all the follows I can get. I think you're going to love the song Friday.
Okay, that's great. Well, welcome back to the program. And also welcome is Ashley Cowart, who is a yoga teacher trainer with Yoga for a Good Hood. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us is Cameron Rowe, a registered dietitian. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
You know, we're going to see if we can touch base with Imani coming up here, Danielle. But you
she
said
she is on her way.
Okay, good. Yes. You said what she's doing in this community is remarkable. Why?
Yes, I think that Imani has completely changed the wellness landscape. I've done yoga for years, kind of on and just on and off. But when I went to Yoga for a Good Hood, first of all, in 37 years, I never had a black yoga teacher. And I just want to say the Black Joy event is actually open to people of color. So black and brown folks are welcomed at that event. I never had a black teacher. And one of the first classes I went to was on Christopher Columbus Day. And somehow in her magic, Imani connected the trauma of oppression and racism and how many people of color are reflecting on that day and how we leave that on the mat and how we could become at peace with some things. I've just never heard a yoga teacher say anything like that. So she is also changing the landscape by training people of color to be yoga teachers. I think there was about 20 students who came out of that last class. So I just think she's doing some remarkable work for our city.
Well, let's just kind of be right out in the open. We think about the wellness industry, even the word wellness. Before the program began, our guest in studio said, there's something that comes to mind, and it's Goop. Which is Gwyneth Paltrow, I think, mm-hmm. With some good advice and sometimes not some interesting advice, but usually pretty expensive. Is that what comes to mind? Ashley, is that what comes to mind for you? I mean, like, do you think too often people are associating wellness in this country with the Gwyneth Paltrows, with wealthy white women?
Yes, definitely.
What do you think, Cameron?
Yes, I would say the same thing. So the Commission on Dietetic Registration is the credentialing agency for registered dietitians, and their latest report showed that 79% of dietitians are white or identify as white. And so there's a huge gap in trying to reach audiences of color. And so that's why it's important to have culturally inclusive nutrition programs.
Yeah, we're going to get to that because, you know, it's interesting. There's a lot of different factors for for why there are disparities and gaps, but it's not always just socioeconomics. I mean, there's a lot of different reasons, and we'll get to that. Daniel Ponder, what do you fear people think of, or what sort of dominates the conversation about wellness? Is it that goop, that Gwyneth Paltrow sort of stuff?
Yeah, I think even the images that I'm like hippy dippy, and the images, the Instagrams I follow, I always scroll through to see how long it takes before I get to a black woman or before I get to a brown woman, because I follow a lot of wellness sites. And I think it tends to cater to more wealthy women who can afford. And that's the other thing about the teacher training, is you could actually get a scholarship to participate, because teacher trainings typically cost thousands of dollars. So women who can afford a private chef to cook vegan meals, or women who can take these expensive yoga classes. I know that's the image because I am in that wellness world, but I'm always seeking out women who look like me that also are interested in those types of things. And that's what I was able to find at Yoga for a Good Hood.
Black Joy Yoga is tomorrow. Starts at 6:00. Tell us where and what you want people to know.
So it's at the Women of Color Art Collective, which I don't know the address off the top of my head.
Oh, 215 Tremont Street.
215 Tremont Street. It's an opportunity for people of color to come into a space, to be around other folks who look like them, to be led by a yoga teacher of color. And I think being a person of color, especially in this day and age, there's so much trauma. I mean, you can literally be on Facebook and see images of black men being killed by police. And that's something that I think many people are desensitized to. But the question is, let's acknowledge the trauma, let's acknowledge what we've been through, but how do we begin the healing process? And I don't think we're talking enough about that. So just creating spaces that we can be in exclusively with each other to begin our healing process.
Now, actually, as someone who went through this kind of training, your class had what, 20?
21.
21. Tell me about the class.
So the class was phenomenal. If I could do it every year, I would. Yoga, when you see yoga, yogis or yoginis, however, you know, you choose to say it. But when you see them, typically it's like a white woman. She's super thin. She's like super flexible. And you get like this fake meaning of yoga. And like, once I went through the training, I really found out what yoga was about. And then I saw like the wellness side. So being that I'm a black woman, I have children, yoga isn't always accessible to me at like some of the fancier studios. And some of the fancier studios I don't want to go to, because it's like a room full of 20 people and I'm the only black person. And then they're trying to make me feel apart. But the ways that they're trying to make me feel apart doesn't make me feel apart. It makes me feel like I want to go back home. And that home is, for me, Yoga for a Good Hood. Not to say I don't see other races there, but like, you get a little bit of everybody. And like, you don't have to feel like they're trying to reach you, because they're not. Like, you just get to be you. You get to be, you know, whether that's black, white, brown, whatever. Like, Yoga for a Good Hood, that training just taught me more about like how I kind of pushed out like the ways that people treat me maybe on my job, the ways that I'm treated as a black woman, or the ways that I'm treated as a single black mother, or like just feeling like I'm always a statistic, so to speak. So Yoga for a Good Hood, the training, just kind of helped me deal with that.
When you say that, when the only image of yoga is a thin white woman, it's sort of a fake look at what yoga is. Tell me more about that.
Yoga is not just about, like, when people think here I do yoga, they're like, the first thing they say, oh, you're flexible. And like, oh, you do yoga? Because they're looking at probably my skin color, my size, like, you do yoga. Like, it's just so far-fetched for them. And then when I'm even doing my home practices, 9 out of 10 is usually like either a white male teaching it or a white woman teaching it. And it's just, it's not like, I don't connect with the instructor the way that I connect with Imani. Like, when Imani comes in and she teaches, because she's the only black teacher I've had as well, when she teaches, she scans the room. She feels the energy of the room. It's more of a, like, you get the wellness side of it. Like, okay, like, she's really trying to, like, help us, like, debrief our stress, help us deal with certain things that we face out in life. When I'm being taught by a a person who's not Black, it's not the same. And I can't, it doesn't feel real. It doesn't feel like I'm really connecting with my yoga instructor from the experience that I had. Mm-hmm. So.
What do you want to do with the training that you had now?
The training that I have now, I want to make it accessible to Black women, because I feel like Black women and Black mothers, motherhood, we take on a lot of weight, like weight of the world, weight of the family, and like how we can just show up when we come onto our mat, that is an opportunity for us to show up for ourselves. So when I get onto my mat, I'm taking stuff that I had to deal with from work, that I had to deal with being a mother, being a Black woman, and then I get to just be me. Like, so.
Now, Imani O'Lear is here. And we're,
yes, I am.
And we're glad to have you. Grab that mic and get real close to for me here. Welcome back. It's nice to see you, by the way.
It's very good to see you and to be seen.
We were just talking about the way that wellness as a word and as an industry is often portrayed, particularly on social media. You know, Danielle was saying she often scrolls through posts on wellness and sees how long it'll take before she sees a Black woman and or a Black person. And there's a dominance that whether you're a Kardashian or a Gwyneth Paltrow on the industry, and there's also kind of an exclusion that comes with that. Take me back to the impact that yoga has had for you and how that started first, Imani.
For me, it started at 11 years old.
11.
And kind of accidentally stumbling upon it and knowing that I needed it immediately. Like as soon as I was a child that struggled with asthma, victim of abuse, and saw my mother, my grandmother, my sisters overextended and always exhausted. And so finding this book by BKS Iyengar, there was something that just happened for me when I tried the postures. Like I didn't understand what pranayama was. I didn't understand what any of that meant, but I did know that when I did some movement, I felt different, right? There's just something that intuitively that I knew. And so I wanted to keep it, although my grandmother said, nope, you're not going to do that. That's of the devil. We're not going to have that in our household. That's a whole cultural thing. We laugh, but you know, like, and it still happens, right? It still is something that's out there, but it started right back then for me. And so I hid my BKS book, Light on Yoga, right next to my Go Ask Alice book. Two books that I weren't allowed to have when I was a kid. Yes.
Wow. And in the last decade or so, how has yoga helped you in different ways and maybe changed or improved your life?
So as a woman that also has several autoimmune diseases, one of the things that my rheumatologist says to me is, if you were not doing yoga, I don't know what your life would be. And so that's just very clear to me that the movements of my body is allowing me to stay present. And my movements are not going to look like everybody else's, but they're mine. And so it saves my life again and again. Literally, I just left. The reason why I was a little behind is an MRI, right? But while getting the MRI, it allowed me to breathe and to just calm myself in the midst of health and crises. Yeah.
In a moment, I want to talk about the founding of Yoga for a Good Hood, but generally speaking, how do you distinguish between the value that wellness, for lack of a better term, sort of the real and good side of wellness versus the overly commercialized kind of dubious side that wellness can be?
Well, I did a TED talk, TEDx talk here at University of Rochester, and I said, wellness is a civil right. And what I am also adding to that, it is also our birthright. Right? It is a civil right and a birthright for us to be well. And it is in its whole sense. And something about yoga and looking at the eight limbs, looking at even wellness and truth-telling, right? That's a limb of yoga. satya, right? And so how can we start becoming a little bit more honest where we are in the state of the world? That's wellness. Where we are on our mats on any given day, that's wellness. And I think that we have a lot to offer in regards to wellness and yoga for our community that is out of breath in so many different aspects.
What does it mean for moms to be able to say, okay, well, we got a daycare option. We can do something about this. I mean, it's hard to coordinate care for your children. It's hard to sometimes coordinate transportation. What has Yoga for a Good Hood done for you to help see that it can be accessible?
They accepted my children. I think that is the most important part. I haven't been to a studio yet where I'm allowed to bring my children who are 3 and 5 and they're allowed to practice or just be kids. I think about when I enter Yoga for a Good Hood. You have this, it's like this, there's this ideology that motherhood has to be, you have to be this backbone. You have to be this warrior. You have to be this person, this jack of all trades who takes on child rearing, focusing on your career, being a provider, trying to stay fit and in shape and healthy, and you're taking on the weight of everybody in the family, and you're not showing up for yourself. So I show up for everybody, one else as a mother, but I don't show up for me. So Yoga for a Good Hood, when I came there, it actually taught me how to come back into my body and how to show up for myself and how to take time for myself. But then it also taught me that my kids can even learn how to do yoga. My 5-year-old knows how to do tree pose. My 3-year-old son knows how to do 3-legged dog. But it also taught my kids community. Like, you're not a distraction. Like, you're a part of this community. Like, it takes all of us to raise my children. And doing this teacher training with Omani and Maritza, like, I got away from feeling secluded and feeling, like, shut out as a mother, because I'm a mother and because I know that kids are a lot of work. Not everybody is accepting of my motherhood. And when I came to Yoga for a Good Hood, they just, like, completely changed my view on motherhood.
Yeah, Imani, that inclusivity that Ashley feels, I think where my mind goes is when we think about truly inclusive, it's great for everybody to be accepting of single moms, families with kids who have needs, but it's even more acute in communities where, there may be more single-parent households. There may be more acute needs for daycare or lack of daycare, lack of general funding and societal care for that. So why did you decide to make sure that moms like Ashley would know that they can be there, that the kids can be there?
Well, there was a special in regards to, I can't remember the name of it, but they talked about fault tolerances for pilots. That pilots have certain buttons in the cockpit to make sure that they don't fail. I wanted to find all the areas that end up making us fail, right? Lack of childcare and the accessibility, food, transportation, right? Those are 3 biggies that I know for me would cause hiccups in doing anything. So I wanted to eliminate those. And so that was a part of the mission. We made sure that they had bus passes if that was necessary. Child care, like safe child care, like not just like throw them in the back room and put on a video. No, sometimes that happened, but with someone that was trained, and we paid for that person's training to be a child care person. And then make sure that healthy meals were happening. So they didn't have to worry about those type of things, right? So when you build in fault tolerances, it makes sure that the person is successful. I was a single parent of 2 children. And I remember getting on the bus with my 2 kids, like trying to figure it out, trying to make their lunches, trying to go to school, trying to do all the things. And I'm like, if I can make sure that you don't have to do that, and our program can make sure that that doesn't have to happen, giddy up.
So tomorrow, once again, if you want to attend Black Joy Yoga, it's a bi-monthly yoga class. It's presented by Yoga for a Good Hood. It is for people of color, taught by teachers of color. Tomorrow, 6 o'clock. And that's at the 215 Tremont Street is the address.
Yes.
For the Women of Color.
Art Collective.
Tickets $10, is that right, Imani?
That is correct.
Okay. And what do people ought to know if they want to get tickets or attend tomorrow?
They can go either to our website, yogaforagoodhood.org, or they can go to our Instagram page, like us, follow us, and then there is a link in the bio. And if that $10 is a hindrance for persons, we also have different scholarship opportunities for people. People have bought about 5 to 8 tickets we have on reserve for persons who just can't financially afford it.
Got it. All right. Before I get some of your feedback on the phones, I want to ask Cameron Rowe, a registered dietitian. We focused so far on yoga and its impact, especially in communities of color. How do you see the broader question of wellness, and especially from the nutritional side of things, where we know there are some nutritional gaps and outcomes in this society?
Absolutely. I think nutrition plays a huge role because food plays a huge role in people's lives. It's good. It's cultural. It's just provides nutrition overall. And so when you look at the making nutrition more culturally appropriate, it's important to consider all of those factors, access and needs and barriers as well.
Where are we falling short there?
I would say I think in representation. Mm-hmm. I'm a part of an organization called Diversified Dietetics, which has been so instrumental in my career as a dietitian. When I decided to become a dietitian, I only knew one dietitian of color. And so in looking at who's giving the nutrition advice, I think it's important to see yourself reflected in that. And I didn't see that until I learned about Diversified Dietetics, which is a nonprofit that it brings awareness to people of color, whether they're dietitians or dietitians-to-be, so students studying to be dietitians or nutrition professionals. And so there, I was able to see meet people from all over the country who have been instrumental in the field of nutrition and in making nutrition culturally appropriate and accessible.
When we only see, or usually typically see, very few people of color in a certain field, in this case it's nutrition and diet, is the assumption then that, well, you know, a dietitian, that's what wealthier white people do. That's not for communities of color. Does that stereotype start to take hold?
I think so. I think even in language, I didn't know what a dietitian was until I happened to come across the career. So what interested me in nutrition was that I lost 90 pounds when I was 16. And a lot of that was research on my own. Fortunately, my family, we were members of the local YMCA, so I was able to exercise there. But when it came to nutrition advice, I had to turn to magazines. And we've already talked about who's represented in magazines. So what I could find on the internet. And so just through that experience, taking that and wanting to give that to people who looked like me or who were looking for people that looked like them in the field.
Do you see the research pointing to, I'm trying to go through last night through the research that we do have, and when it comes to gaps in health outcomes, mm-hmm. and the best I could see is that it's not just socioeconomic, so that certainly plays a factor, and that there's a lot that we may still not know, but what do you want to see sort of studied or understood better by society about what's causing gaps in outcomes?
I think looking both in the urban and the rural sector, I think looking both in smaller and larger communities, what has worked in all of those areas, and just talking to key stakeholders the people doing grassroots efforts like Imani, because they are knowing what's working in those communities and how can you take what's already working and implement that on a larger scale and then get policymakers behind it.
Well, we got our first phone call. It's from Rich in Rochester. Let me grab it now. Go ahead, Rich.
Hey, how you doing, Evan?
Very good. Go ahead.
This is a good subject. One thing I've noticed is that in the wellness stuff, it, like they're saying, for people of color, it's like it's not accessible. It's like they make it, just everything about it is not accessible. I'm listening to her. I took a trip around to national parks, and the number of black people I saw was like, I bet you it was less than 0.5%. Now, that doesn't seem like a big thing, but it is, because that's part of the wellness, to experience the world around you and to see these things and to see yourself as part of something bigger. And I think that goes to wellness too. But to, on the dietitian's point of view, I think it's hard for a person of color to go to, say, for instance, a dietitian who may be white, who almost minimizes the foods or the culture that we come from. So instead of looking at our food as something that is good, they sort of dismiss it and say, you must eat like us, instead of trying to look at the food that we eat and incorporate good, healthy habits with the foods we eat, with the taste and the palate that we have, because there's also difference in palates when you come from different cultures. And to me, it seems like all of this stuff is minimized, and it seems like it's just summarily rejected, and people don't like to be minimized and rejected. So I think that's what I see as part of the problem, too.
Well, Rich, thank you, as always, and I'll let Cameron Rowe handle that. How do you address some of those points he's making there?
I would agree with him. The first thing that popped in my mind was like white rice, right? Because white rice is a staple for mm-hmm. a lot of different communities, mm-hmm. right? And the message is, oh, you should be eating brown rice. But you, by saying that, you are alienating people, and you don't know like what they, if they have access to brown rice. Do they know how to prepare it? It tastes different. The way it absorbs flavors, the texture, all of that is different. And so as dietitians, we're trained nutrition, food, and experts to, so we know what to do on the food side, right? So with white rice, you know that people are missing fiber. So just find another way to get fiber in the diet and let them eat the white rice. Yeah. So I think that it's important to be informed. I think it's important to ask questions, right? Because the people that you're serving, they're experts on their own lived experience. And so it's okay to admit that you don't know. So open up that dialogue and ask the right questions, and then use the expertise that you have on the food and nutrition side to allow them to maintain their cultural practices.
Have you seen some breakthroughs when you're working with people on that?
Yes, I have. I have. And I think that when people are heard, when they mm-hmm. are understood, I think they're more likely to make those changes, and they're more likely to be sustainable or lasting.
Yeah. One of the themes that you're going to hear in the coming weeks on this program is sort of a fresh look at what our country and sort of what society, the way it's structured and who has power and control and who does not. It's almost like even people who get elected who claim to have the best interest in mind think that, well, if everyone just lives like me, then, you know. And I was listening to an interview the other day just even about New York City and big sugary drink laws. And it was an interesting point of view because, you know, I don't know dietitians who think we all should be drinking big gulps. However, there's a lot to take in mind when it comes to, and this is not about, by the way, people of color versus not, this is just sort of socioeconomically. Imagine all day long you feel like you're paid poor wages if you've got a job at all. You're frustrated in a lot of different ways, and then you get home and government still wants to tell you what you can't even get a big gulp from the corner because it's cheap and you can fill up at least that way, but now you're not allowed to do that. Instead of saying, we're going to work with this to kind of make a better change. Does this make sense to you, Cameron? I mean, again, I'm not endorsing big sugary drinks at all, but it's an interesting look at the mindset people may have when it comes to sort of top-down patronizing as opposed to listening.
Yes, I would agree with you.
Yeah, and so, listeners, if you want to join the conversation, you can jump in here. And by the way, Imani, you want to jump?
Well, I was just thinking about the Ngozi-Saba principles, Kujichagulia. Kujichagulia is self-determination. Like, I name myself, I know who I am, And that is good. And so many times for people of color, that has been taken and stripped away from us, right? All the way, if you start going into ancestral trauma, that's a whole nother conversation, right? But of names being stripped from us, our culture being taken away from us. So I do think it's very important. And so one of the things that we do, even though we try to provide a healthy meal, but how can we do it with the variations at the project as well? Because we know what tastes good in our mouth. It's good, right? Right. So Kuji Chakalia is definitely one of the principles of our project.
Let's get our only break of the hour, and we'll continue the conversation. More feedback from you if you like as we talk about Black Joy Yoga, which is a project being run by Yoga for a Good Hood. It's a bi-monthly yoga class presented by Yoga for a Good Hood. It's for people of color, taught by teachers of color. And the next session's tomorrow, starting at 6 o'clock. You can get tickets online at Yoga for a Good Hood's website. Imani O'Lear is the founder, and she's here alongside Ashley Cowart, who's a yoga teacher trainer with Yoga for a Good Hood. Daniel Ponder is a board member of Yoga for a Good Hood. She's got a single out Friday, by the way. New music from Daniel Ponder. And Cameron Rowe is a registered dietitian who's with us as well. We continue in just a moment. I'm Evan Dawson, host of Connections on WXXI. On Tuesday, impeachment hearings continue in Washington with four witnesses scheduled to testify. We think it's important to bring live coverage of impeachment hearings to you, and you will hear that from noon to 2. You will hear everything as it happens live this week and beyond, and Connections will be back with you whenever the impeachment hearings are done. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Allie writes to us to say that as a white woman who appreciates yoga, I'm bummed out to hear that one of your guests does not necessarily feel comfortable with white teachers, but I don't blame her. What can we do so that everyone feels comfortable?
Ooh.
That's from Allie. Go ahead, okay. Ashley, if you want to hit that.
I think sometimes when you go into predominantly white studios, they don't respect your space. Like, I want you to respect my space. And I don't want you to feel like you have to call me girl to feel like you're connecting with me. I want you to understand that when you, in order to connect with me, like, have a theme for your class. Don't just get up here and teach yoga. Yoga to me, like, when I teach, I want to map it out because I understand I have a responsibility with the bodies that are in front of me. Like, I want to help them, like, break up some of the stuff that they deal with off of their mat. When you go into the predominantly white studios, it's no connection. It's just like a disconnect. Like, it's like, girl, you're trying to, like, say, like, cool hip things, and it just makes you feel so out of place. Like, this is why I don't want to come. I don't want to come because, one, it's not accessible to everybody, but then I also don't want to come because the things that you think that will help you connect with me are not the things that's helping you connect. It's actually causing a greater disconnection.
Can I just second that? Because I think the pandering is so real. Like, I went to a yoga class in a very expensive place back when I had lawyer money. And I remember three white women surrounded me and were like, we're so proud of you. You did so amazing. And I'm like, I've done yoga multiple times. I had another class that I was in. It wasn't yoga. It was a spin class. In the middle of the class, the teacher comes over to me. I just have to touch your hair. Ooh. And I'm just like, okay. But the pandering happens a lot. And because I think, to be honest, most people who are in these studios are white liberals, right? So they want to see themselves as the good white person. And they may do that by engaging with you in ways that are very inauthentic for them. And I think the best white yoga teachers I have were just themselves. And their goal was to help you get to a place of peace, not to try to culturally connect in a very forced way, like calling you girl, which is something I've also experienced.
And then also, so there, Melissa, I can't remember her last name. Melissa has a studio on Monroe Ave. Walking into her studio also felt like home, but it felt like home because you got to see, like, different races. So there's white teachers, there's black, there's man. Like, you get a little bit of everybody. But then also, like, the energy that she has, like, is just, I connect with her. Like, she was one of the studios where I went to her studio outside of Yoga for a Good Hood. Revolution felt like home. But it felt like home because she didn't try. She was just her, and we just connected.
Mm-hmm. Imani, you were nodding through a lot of that. Can you add to some of that, too? That way of connection or lack of connection or false authenticity?
One of the things that I have found when I travel to different studios, whether it's here or there or everywhere, it is also the lack of acceptance of the different bodies. And usually the ableist language that comes across is belittling. It is pandering, right? Just because I can't put my leg behind my head, right? Like, why are you commenting and coming in that way? And so realizing that I struggle typically with not teaching, as Ashley spoke to the bodies that are actually in the room. Don't in the middle of your class say and cartwheel your hands down, but I know that some of you can't, you know, right? Like, it's an interesting way in which people speak in sometimes of the communities. So that's probably, so not to repeat what they both have said, that's the other part that stands out for me.
And when it comes to, you know, acceptance of all bodies, all backgrounds, Cameron, do we need to make sure we're doing that with nutrition, too?
Absolutely. And there's a huge movement out that I was talking to Danielle about prior to the show called Health at Every Size. And that's what that movement aims to do. And so I think one of my own, I guess, ways that I guess feel bad about or put myself down in being a dietitian, besides being a dietitian of color, is also with size and feeling like I need to be a specific size if I'm giving somebody nutrition advice. But you can't look at someone from the outside and see their lab results or see, you know, their health. And so it's important to keep in mind that that the physical doesn't always show you the whole story or the whole picture.
Before I move on from this, I want to just sort of gently ask Ashley, because, you know, you say when if you're in a mostly white studio and women call you girl, do white people do that without knowing they're doing it?
Yeah.
A lot? He's looking at me like, yes.
So
let's just be real.
So I also.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So I also work at a predominantly white nursing home and rehabilitation center. And I get it there too. Mm. And I think it's just a way of not knowing how to connect with me and not knowing that, like, sometimes the way of connecting with me is just not trying. Just be yourself and I'm going to be myself and then we'll just connect. Like, we'll find some type of common ground. Mm-hmm. But I think that a lot of, at least, like, I say 8 times out of the week when I'm talking to a white person, I get called girl or homegirl.
Homegirl.
Those two things, I hate that. And so instantly when I hear that, like, I shut down. I'm like, okay, I can't. Because I like to be called Ashley. I like to be, or sometimes I like to be called Mocha too, but I like to be called Ashley. Like, I'm not a girl. Like, I don't know. I think sometimes what they see on TV and then what they see in real life, it's like a disconnect. Like, sometimes what you see on TV is just for TV's sake. Like, and then me in real life is just like, this is me. Like, I like to be called Ashley. I'm not your homegirl. I'm not your homegirl. I'm not your girl. You're not my friend. So call me Ashley.
You're laughing over there.
It's just such a real experience that I think all Black women have had. Girl, or the new thing is, yes, queen. And I'm like, stop it. This is an announcement. All white people, stop saying yes, queen, please. But I think every Black woman could attest to that moment.
Okay. One more question for Ashley before I jump back to the phones, because, you know, I think you've really helped us see what makes you uncomfortable or not connecting. Is it just the stop trying too hard and just be yourself that will help you connect more? If you're in spaces where, again, if it's predominantly white yoga studio or wherever the case may be, just be yourself?
Yes, I definitely think being yourself, but also just understanding that there's no science. Like, you can connect with me just like you can connect with another white person. Mm-hmm. There is no special formula that you have to use to connect with me because you see that I'm not your skin complexion. I think that's the most important thing. When you focus on how can I connect with him, how can I connect with him, you don't connect. But when you focus on, let me just be myself, whatever that is, however that looks, I'm going to be able to connect with her. And it's not about me. It's not about trying to connect because she's black and because, you know, like, oh, I got to feel like, let me show I'm not racist, or let me show that, you know, we're accepting of black people. It's just be yourself and we will connect.
No, I find it interesting because I'm sure there's a lot of people with really good intentions who don't realize that what they're actually signaling is, I don't feel comfortable enough just to be authentic with you.
Right.
And therefore, that undermines the goal of actually making a real connection.
Yes.
That's interesting. And I really appreciate that. I'm also glad that I'm old enough that I wouldn't even know how to use Yes Queen in a sentence. I don't even know the context of it. I don't even know.
That's good, Evan. Good.
Yeah.
You're already a step ahead.
Yeah, I guess so. All right, Andrew in Rochester, next on the phone. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hi, yeah, another great show. And I want to throw something into the equation. I recommend everybody do yoga, everybody walk, everybody drink enough water. But a big part of health is the foods we eat. And this, what I'm going to say, has to do particularly with African Americans. There's a Dr. Milton Mills. He's a doctor, researcher. And he's gone on record saying that our pie chart, our USDA chart that shows that we're supposed to have dairy, is racist because 75% of all African Americans are allergic to dairy products and milk. They eat them and drink them thinking it's healthy, but they have upset stomachs. It affects African Americans way more than almost any other group except for Asians. So I would encourage let food be thy medicine. That's part of being healthy. And there's a new documentary out on Netflix called The Game Changers. I would recommend everybody watch that. And that's important for everybody. Dairy is implicated in breast cancer and prostate cancer. So if you start with the food you eat and then exercise, that's the best you can do. But I would recommend people pay attention to that. 75% of African Americans, that's a huge number, allergic to dairy.
Yeah,
thanks for the show.
Andrew, thanks. In terms of a quick fact check there, producer Megan Mack kicks this my way from Cornell and the National Digestive Diseases Information Clearinghouse. Some 30 million to 50 million Americans are lactose intolerant. Those numbers include up to 75% of African Americans, 75% of Native Americans, 90% of Asian Americans. I did not know that. I'm going to turn to the dietitian in the room.
Yes, that's actually true. That's actually true. And I think that this is the importance of looking at nutrition on the individual level. And you know yourself better than anyone else. So you can have tests done, but those can be really expensive and sometimes inconclusive. And so you can start by eliminating it from your diet, slowly bringing it back in and seeing how your body responds to it. And fortunately now on the market, there's a lot of plant-based milks that are available. And, I think the biggest difference between that and the dairy counterparts is the amount of protein and the fat content. And so just making sure you have that available in other sources in your diet.
It's interesting. My son's almost 8 and he, his school is trying to get students to spend less time on screens, as I say, holding my phone. But in the hour before bed every night, there's a checklist of things. And if you get to check a certain number of boxes, you get, school bonuses or a little party, whatever. And one of the things before bed is to have a glass of milk before bed. I'm going, what? drink a glass of milk right before bed? Like, did the dairy industry write this this plan here? But would you go so far as to what the caller, Andrew, is saying is he's hearing from experts in the field to say, if you're ignoring those statistics, it's actually a racist advocacy for milk consumption. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, it can be exclusionary, ignoring that and the fact that a large portion of the population is not able to tolerate that specific nutrient. And so it can become problematic when people don't know what to, for lack of a better word, substitute in its place.
All right, let me get back to the phones. And John calling from Seneca County. Go ahead, John.
Evan. Hey, I'm very glad to hear you talking about wellness and inclusion. My only comment today is the fact that the people in the studio have said they feel uncomfortable with classes led by a white instructor. What they're doing is starting a class, and they said it's only for brown or black people, is what the person in the studio made the comment. To me, that seems like almost the exact definition of racism, is they are starting a class and excluding one race of people based on skin color. So I love the fact that we're talking about wellness and inclusion, but I would like their comment on why they are starting a class for only brown and black people.
Okay, John. Thank you. Imani, you want to start?
Sure. So at Yoga for a Good Hood, it is a space where everyone is welcome. We have persons that are of color and persons of poverty, and we know that poverty hits all persons. But there is also a need for space to be able to articulate safely some of the frustrations that is unique to persons of color. I go to a lupus support group. Everybody in the room has lupus, and everybody has some conversation around that. Black and brown bodies have different things that have been affecting their breath that they need to safely be able to articulate. Sometimes that's difficult in the run of the week. And so Black Joy is a space to be able to, like, enjoy who you are and how you move. And like, when you start talking about even like with the language in a class, about, all right, let's try to tighten our booties. Well, as Black women, I want my booty to be full. And I want to be able to have that discussion safely, right? And it's just a different cultural expression. It's not about excluding someone. Think of it as a way to just create space for those who just need to just be with one another. That's all.
Would it be different if, you know, would you feel differently if someone said all yoga and all spaces should be divided by race?
No, I wouldn't feel comfortable with that at all.
Right.
Right.
So to John's point, there's plenty of space and locations and spaces in this society right here where people can go
and during the week, that is a truth for us. But this special class is so that we can just sit and support each other, Ashley.
And to kind of like try to go off what Imani said, I've had a couple of occasions where we had to talk about race and we had to talk about the discrimination against African Americans, and I didn't feel comfortable to voice how it made me feel. I work with all white clients and taking care of them, and they're calling me niggers and they're calling me blackie. And then to come into a space where, like, okay, I had this happen. You don't know what I feel. You don't know what I suppress. You don't know how I put on a smile. But then how do I deal with that and get that out of my body and still be able to do my job? Coming into Black Joy, I think it just helps you deal with the stuff that you face out in the world. And then we get to kind of like debrief in this space. But we also get to like feel okay to do it. Like, I feel like sometimes if I say, like, oh, I was someone I was discriminated against, I don't feel comfortable saying that because it makes me look like a victim. And they say we always cry victim. So that, to me, when I go to Black Joy tomorrow, I'm going to take all the stuff that I had to deal with from this week, last week, months before that, and I'm going to put it all on my mat, and I'm going to leave it.
Yeah. I think it's like, you know.
40 seconds. Go ahead, Danielle.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
I was just going to say, does John want to go to Imani's lupus support group? No, he doesn't, because he doesn't have lupus. So Black people have certain experiences that white people don't have. Black and brown bodies have experiences that white folks don't have. And that's why we created those spaces. So that was just what I was going to add.
It is tomorrow, the next session. It's a bi-monthly yoga class presented by Yoga for a Good Hood. It is for people of color, taught by teachers of color, tomorrow, 6 o'clock. And tickets are $10, but they do have help if that's out of reach. So online, Yoga for a Good Hood, where, Imani?
Yes, we're at 111 North Chestnut Street.
Oh, but what's your website online?
Oh, yogaforagoodhood.com.
Yogaforagoodhood.com. And I want to thank all of our guests for being inside. Imani is the founder of Yoga for a Good Hood. Thanks. Nice to see you as always. Thank you.
Always. Thank you.
Danielle Ponder, look for her new single dropping Friday.
Where follow me on Instagram, Facebook.
Where you find your music. and the new album in 2020, when she'll be back here to talk about that. But she's a board member of Yoga for a Good Hood, and a yoga teacher trainer over there is Ashley Coher. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for being here. Cameron Rowe, registered dietitian. Been great having you. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Yogaforagoodhood.com. There you go. Thanks to Christina Damo. Oh, Chris, somebody is telling me something through the glass. Oh, it's .org. Is it .org, Imani? Oh, it is .org. We're fixing it. Yogaforagoodhood.org. From the whole Connections team, have a great day. We'll talk to you later this week.